Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday, and it is the 20th of September in the year 2006. I'm glad that you're with us tonight, folks. Let me begin here with our spiritual message. This is from A Course in Miracles. I've been doing these a lot, as you know. This is from the text, page 9. It says, you can wait, delay, paralyze yourself, or reduce your creativity almost to nothing, but you cannot abolish it. Want to hear that one once more? You can wait, delay, paralyze yourself, or reduce your creativity almost to nothing, but you cannot abolish it. I hope you've had a nice week since we talked last, folks. Well, actually, I was on with Darren last night. I don't know how many of you listened to Darren. I urge you to do so. Darren was going to be on. Darren Weeks was going to be on with us this evening. He's discovered, and I wanted to mention this before we bring Alan up. Alan Watt is with us. Alan, thanks for being here, by the way.
Yes, pleasure.
I don't want to leave you sitting there in the quiet. Darren discovered a vaccine. In Michigan, it's in the Michigan legislature. In fact, 2 days after it was introduced, it had already been passed through the Senate committee. This is on a fast track. My. I'm having problems with some words tonight. It is a vaccine, folks, and the reason I'm telling you about this, well, I tell you anyway, but when Darren began doing his research on it, he found that 45 state legislatures are already messing with this son of a gun. And this is a vaccine that is mandated for sixth grade girls in the government indoctrinational system we once called schools. It is a mandated vaccine for sixth grade girls. Those are girls, 10 and 11 years old, sixth grade girls. And it is to prevent cervical cancer. Darren has done a lot of research on it, and he talked about it Monday. His broadcasts are archived on Sweet Liberty, of course, or at originally they're archived at First Amendment Radio, and then after a period of time. But if you are not subscribing to First Amendment Radio, you might want to do that, because you get the archives then the same day or the next day if you don't hear the broadcast live. He's having a guest on Monday. He's interviewing a woman who's actually in the legislature. And the insidious thing about this, what's happening in Michigan, is the legislator, she's a senator who introduced this thing, is when Darren called her office about it, the assistant secretary that he spoke with said, oh, she has been spending a lot of time on this. She's working with a group that's helping her with it. Well, he finds out that the group is called Women in Government. And when he went to their website, guess who their sponsors are? Women in Government. Merck and GlaxoSmithKline. Those are two pharmaceutical companies. And it just so happens, folks, that Merck is the only pharmaceutical right now that has this vaccine ready. It hasn't been tested for safety, of course. And when he went to the Merck website and pulled this up, I don't recall what it is. Darren will be talking about it again Monday night and interviewing the woman from the state legislature. I don't think she's a rep or a senator, but she works there in the legislature. found out that this thing has aluminum in it. I don't know what other ingredients. It is supposedly, again, a vaccine that would prevent cervical cancer. And it's interesting, I didn't know this because I don't watch the news and I don't get mainstream television. But my sis said for the last 2 months they've been talking about this on evidently the news and different programs, that they have discovered that cervical cancer comes from a virus. So now they're planning on shoving more of these chemicals into the young children. I want you to know about it, and I think you ought to check into your state and to see. Darren has written an article about it. He's going to post it at Sweet Liberty, so all the information will be there. And I hope you will look into it and at least make a call. Make a call to your state legislator. Your state legislator doesn't know what the ingredients in these stupid things are. And call informed and let them know that at least in Michigan, because maybe this woman in government group is pushing it through all the states, folk. Maybe that's how what Merck is using as the tool to get this into the state, women in government. You might want to write that down. Go to their website. Because it may be, as I was saying, it may be that they're pushing it into all the states, 45 of them now. Alan, here we go again, huh?
I'm not surprised, but...
I'm not surprised either.
And, of course, we know from long study that the inoculations they gave in the past had nothing to do with what they claimed. They were for alternative purposes. And it's nothing new. It's been known for about 60, 70 years that virus, that the human papilloma virus, is what the wart, basically, venereal wart, is what starts off the cervical cancer. That's always been known.
No, you're kidding me.
No.
Is a wart a virus?
Yeah, it's caused by a virus, you see. And it's not the same exactly as you get on your skin elsewhere, but it's just as contagious. Maybe
is it a form of herpes, Alan?
No. It's a virus
wart
family, but it's it's different. It causes little warts inside, generally the vagina. Women can carry it for many years without knowing. For guys, it's obviously more obvious, and it's terribly, terribly hard to get rid of. But it'd be quite the thing to claim they've got a particular antidote to this, a preventative, because, like all viruses, there's so many strains and varieties.
Right.
So I very much doubt this has to do with what they're claiming. I don't trust them at all, in fact.
Of course not.
When you go into the history of vaccination.
And then when he looked into the ingredients, aluminum is present, Alan.
And that causes Alzheimer's.
Uh-huh, yes, yeah, exactly.
But there'll be other... And I'll tell you another thing, too. When they tell you something like aluminum, it's often to sidetrack you on to focus on that. Well, there's another thing that's much more ominous.
That's even worse.
Inside there, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It'll attack the hormonal system, I've no doubt, because they want to bring down the population drastically. Yeah.
And they're doing it in all their insidious and evil ways.
And it's highly Masonic. I mean, Merck is Mercury, the messenger. That's why they called it Merck, you know. And the high Masons love Mercury, the messenger.
Maybe that's why they use the Marisol.
Yeah.
Which is Mercury.
That's where Mercury comes from.
Uh-huh.
And women in government is just wig, by the way.
Is what?
Maybe this stuff makes your hair fall out. I don't know.
Is wigs?
Yeah,
wigs.
Yeah, but what I was going to say was...
it's a cover-up.
I know there was one woman, there's probably a few, but there was one woman in a video I watched to do with Monsanto's modified food. And this woman worked for the Federal Drug Administration, and so she was in politics, back into the FDA, and then she was into Monsanto, working for them, back and forth five times from Monsanto back to working for the government.
Wow.
I wonder if it's the same one. So they have their own agents in the government.
This state senator...
Yeah, you have to dig up her history.
Yeah, well, she was... I don't think she's the president. I think she just finished as seat chairman of the board on women in government.
Mm-hmm.
And their sponsor, being Merck, you would think this is a tremendous conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what Darren did. He went to the newsroom. You know, he's an engineer at a TV station.
Yeah.
He told them about it, and they did a thing on it. And they mentioned that it sounded like a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And once he's got the ingredients and understands what's in it, he's going to ask them to do a follow-up. But then to find out that it is in 45 states. One thing I wanted to say to our listeners, this is a mandated thing, folks. Every single state has an opt-out form that parents can opt their children out of the vaccines and they can't be kicked out of school. They will not tell you that, but that is so. And I know in Missouri, for a matter of fact, when Nicole was, she actually called Health and Human Services to get a copy of an opt-out form when they were mandating Ashy's grade. They all had to have the tetanus vaccine, Alan.
Uh-huh.
And when she got up to the school, I guess almost the entire class was being sent home because they weren't vaccinated. And she told them that she was going to be signing an opt-out form. She had one coming from Health and Human Services. And the lady there said, well, honey, we have them right here. And she handed one to Nicole, and that's all it was. It didn't have to be any religious or philosophical, just there's an opt-out form. The problem is, when they mandate this, most of the parents don't know they can opt their children out of them, Alan.
I know. And even though you can opt out, they'll still try sort of covert threatening and Children's Aid, etc. That you've got up against the whole bureaucracy
of
NGOs. The Children's Aid Society, by the way, is non-governmental. I hope people realize that.
The what?
It's a non-governmental institution.
What would you say again what you just said,
The Children's Aid Society.
Children's Aid Society? I've never heard of that.
Well, Children's Aid is the same thing as the child,
A Children Family Services, you mean?
Yeah, because these actually started up as NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and simply got funding eventually from government, but they're still classified as basically private institutions. So they often threaten the parents with these different services if they refuse to go along with their...
Well, in the States here, Alan, the Children Family, they have different names for them, but it's the Department of Family. They have different names for them.
Yeah.
But it's an agency. They're bureaucrats that work in them.
Uh-huh.
It is an agency that has been created by the state legislature.
Uh-huh.
And they create these agencies, and it's, of course, such broad language, and there is so much leeway given, so much latitude given, that there's almost no stopping them. I mentioned this, I believe, last night, because Darren asked me to come on with him. Here in Pennsylvania, I was talking to a secretary of one of our state reps, and she said whenever somebody has called his office to ask for help, because Children Family Services, I'm not sure what they call them here, are harassing them and threatening them, he called to try to help a constituent. Here's what he was told. You created us, you gave us this power, and there's nothing you can do about it. So not even the state legislators, once they've created the monster, not even they can intervene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we are living under tyranny. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And it's interesting that Carl Jung, back in the 1950s, who really was way superior to any Freud they put out there, his worst vision of the future that he was sure was coming by the signs that he saw then. It wasn't just an iron curtain across a country like Germany or whatever. He saw an iron wall around the whole planet of bureaucracy that would stifle all free thought and existence. And he was quite right, that's what we're coming into.
Well,
now.
Karl Marx, I don't know that this is true just because I read it,
yeah.
But I read that Karl Marx didn't write all his writings, he was just a front person.
He was a front angle.
So
quite a lot of the writing.
Okay, and so he saw this. No, he didn't see this. It was in the plan, yes?
Well, it was Lenin who wrote about it himself. Lenin said the time would come in the West towards the millennium. He was talking about 2000. And he wrote this back in the early 1900s. He said a time would come in the West where bureaucracies would be so all-pervasive and so numerous that they'd be overstepping each other's boundaries, causing confusion as they battled for power between themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And he said this is a stage that the world must go through. He knew the whole agenda. So we had to go through the stage of apparent confusion, over-regulation, until even the bureaucrats are stepping over each other.
Right, because they all overlap.
And then they come out with a new system, a new society. Yeah. Everything's planned, even the crisis.
Yeah, well, of course. I'll tell you what I did. I was looking for a particular article in my files, in my email files. I have a jillion folders. And so I did a search. I wasn't able to find it, but I remembered reading, and this was, I believe, a newspaper report that the Congress, the U.S. Congress, I may have even mentioned it when I had it emailed to me, that the U.S. Congress had shortened the time, required time for the pharmaceuticals to test their new drugs.
Oh, yeah.
The time it was shortened to was 8 weeks, Alan.
8 weeks, I know, and even then...
8 weeks!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know, it's pathetic, because... But then again, it falls right into the agenda, because remember Carl Quigley himself, who was a historian. He was the official historian
for the CFR.
For the secretive CFR organization,
right,
which is the American branch of the Royal Institute of International Affairs. And he said, and right in there, that the new world order will consist of a new type of feudal system with corporations taking the parts of the warlords and nobility. So we're finding more and more so that the legislation is getting passed on behalf of massive international corporations. That's happening. And look at all the politicians, all these lawyers, corporate lawyers, they've been either working for these corporations before they go into politics, or they go into them after they've left politics. So it's one and the same thing, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so private corporations are getting their way. We saw it here in Canada quite a few years ago, when we found out through Britain, through a protest that was happening in Britain, when Tony Blair was pushing through the modified food, the genetically modified vegetables. It came out, it leaked out from the NGOs in Britain who were protesting that Canadians had been using this stuff for 10 years and they hadn't told the populace.
Right.
So the government had to come out with a statement, and they did admit in all the newspapers they signed a secret agreement with Monsanto and others to test this stuff on the Canadians. A secret agreement from your own government.
Your own government.
Uh-huh.
They aren't our government,
I
Alan.
I know.
Jeez.
I mean, this Mickey Mouse show is pathetic. But that's what they give us.
When you think about, I suppose, do you think the Parliament, I would imagine so, in Canada, do you imagine, is it a corporation like the U.S. Government,
yeah,
Inc.?
Yeah.
They're all corporations.
They're all patronized.
And so Paul Martin, is Paul Martin still there?
No, well, he's not there now. No, he's working for the UN as far as I know.
Oh, who's the new guy taking over?
Oh, it's Harper, Stephen Harper.
Stephen Harper, okay.
Yeah.
So he's the CEO.
He is the CEO.
Yes.
Yeah.
So is Bush. Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. But they're not the admirals. They're only the captains of the ship.
Yeah. Well, they're more like the janitors. Let's face it.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's rather sad and pathetic to try and even pretend to yourself that these guys are in charge of you, because they're not. They're going along with an old agenda. We can read their predecessors who wrote books on it. And it doesn't matter which party gets in, the agenda steamrolls ahead, because the bureaucracies are there forever, regardless of who appears to be the front man in Parliament. The bureaucracies are there for life, forever.
And they have schools for the for the bureaucrats.
They do.
For the children of the bureaucrats.
They're all intergenerational.
Yeah, I read that recently. I know you've said that.
Yeah.
And I've read that just recently. It was some particular individual I was reading about, and that he had gone to school as a child of a bureaucrat.
Yeah.
He went to the school for bureaucrats to grow up to be a bureaucrat.
Mm-hmm. And they marry each other to... it's a closed society. They always live in a specific area of each capital city of every nation. And they intermarry and go to the same social clubs, and and they don't really mingle with the general population. So they're a class to themselves, really. Yeah. But they know when they go into a department that they're schooled into what their function will be, their role will be for their whole life, what they have to push forward. And H.G. Wells talked about that when he did the write-up on the League of Nations, the precursor of the United Nations.
The League to Control Peace?
Yeah, he said that basically now, he says, with the League of Nations, it is the embryo of World Parliament. He says, in every country has its bureaucrats who can now correspond directly with equivalent bureaucracies at the League of Nations.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's the same today. They don't even have to go through the politicians.
Sure.
Yeah.
But the politicians have created them in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Every single agency. I started, I have a report, a UN report, from three meetings that were held back in the 1950s. One was in the Soviet Union. One was in Switzerland. I don't recall where the third one was. And that was when they were talking about, it has to do with the housing administration. Yes, I think that's what it was. HUD over here.
Uh-huh.
That was before HUD was even formed.
Mm-hmm.
And I got looking up in the encyclopedia to see when HUD was created, and it was right after that meeting took hold. It was about regional governance. There was a quote in there that the main purpose for this particular individual was the transfer of land from private to public use.
Yeah.
That was back in 1950. And then all of these, they kept using these phrases, and they all related to different agencies.
Yeah.
That are here in the U.S. And as you said, I mean, they're all brothers and sisters across the world, created under the auspices of the United Nations.
Yeah.
And I do have a United Nations report here where they intend to become a true world parliamentary government.
Yeah. They've said in many statements that their function is eventually to become the world's government.
Yes.
They've said it quite openly.
So they need their own army.
Uh-huh.
They need their own taxing agenda. And they need, the only thing that was lacking, they said, was the people's parliament.
Mm-hmm.
The voice of the people.
The
voice of the people are the non-governmental organizations.
Yeah.
That's the voice of the people.
That's the Soviet. That's
uh-huh.
what Soviet means.
Uh-huh.
NGOs. Yeah.
The councils.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Unelected councils, and just like the Soviet Union, they claim to speak for the people. The people demand this, the people demand that, but each head of the organization was appointed by the Soviet Politburo itself.
Uh-huh.
So it won't be any different here. We know
no, of
that.
Course not.
Yeah.
But when you have all of these thousands, because there are thousands of them, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact, any listener who might be interested, they're in our United Nations section at sweetliberty.org, there is a report that was done on, in fact, it was piece by pieces, and it was all about the non-governmental organizations and how they were going to bring the New World Order in by these organizations. I think the thing was done, it came from the University of Pennsylvania,
yeah.
and I think it may have been 43.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been 34, I don't know. It was back way back. And already They said there were 2,700 of them, Alan.
Yeah, and it started in the 1700s.
Yep.
It started initially by the foundations, which were philanthropists, they called it at the time, the multi-millionaires of the day, very high Freemasons too, and they'd all got together and decided how to take the world over, and of course money was the key, so they had to control the world's resources and get to the top, then they could finance and front these little NGO groups, and it's gone on steadily since then. The big NGOs are not grassroots at all, never were. They have big buildings, a lot of them, computerized equipment all over the place,
right,
and different floors. They have pension plans, so they're not grassroots. These are authorized and funded by the Ford, Carnegie, Rockefeller foundations, and many others.
Yeah, people would be maybe interested to know that the Boy and Girl Scouts of America, it's an international, and it is considered an NGO. And the YM and YWCAs,
yeah,
are non-governmental organizations recognized by the United Nations.
Yeah, that's right. So it's the same old con, the pretense that there's someone there to speak for you. And as long as the pretense is there, that most of the public goes along with it.
Yes. Well, I wanted our listeners to know about this so they can look into it. I understand that Pennsylvania is one of the states, and I'm going to take a look into it and at least give my state legislator a call, my state rep and state senator. I don't know what the situation is here, but it behooves each of us to check it out, because you have no idea the difference you may make.
Yeah.
And that's true. I know that's true.
And you got to hit something at the beginning, if possible, before it begins. Once it's underway, it becomes normal so quickly, you know.
Yeah.
You got to hit things right away to stop things. You can't let them start and then hit them. It's very difficult then,
mm-hmm,
to stop them.
And you know, I know that it's frustrating for people who are awake and who are waking up. Well, we're all waking up. We're in a process of waking up.
Yeah.
Some of us have woken up a little bit before others. But it's frustrating when they try to talk to friends, neighbors, associates, family, and, you know, they get the eyes rolling up. And but here's how I feel about this. If we know something that can affect their loved ones and them, then it's our responsibility to say it, because it is planting seeds. And like you said, not to get out there and start preaching, but just say it.
Yeah.
And then if they care and say, whoa, tell me more about this, then you have a person with some active gray matter.
And you stay on the topic. See, people generally know so many different areas where everything's happening, they overload the person,
mm-hmm,
rather than stick on a topic and leave it with them at that until maybe the next time.
Right, or unless they ask a question.
Yeah.
A lot of times, if you get talking to somebody,
yeah,
then it sparks a question in their mind.
Yeah,
that's and
okay.
Then if they ask, then that's fine.
Uh-huh. And keep it, again, it's short, because you could probably give them enough knowledge for a book on each topic, but you don't realize how much you've stored up in your head.
Uh-huh.
So you only give them enough on each topic for the time being.
Uh-huh.
And that's how you can do it, because you're talking to people who've swallowed their conditioned reality, and they truly believe if there's anything really, really worth knowing, the media will tell them.
Yeah, right.
They really believe that.
And I have an example to give. I think we're about out of our first half hour.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I have time. It isn't long, but I don't want to be interrupted. But just so that our listeners see that it can happen, and then at least you've said it, and that is our responsibility. I just don't see that any other way, Alan. I just don't see it any other way. Folks, we're going to be back right after this in about 3 minutes, so you stay with us. I'm Jackie Patru. In case you may be a new listener, and Alan Ladd is our guest this evening, as usual. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188. Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite. If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25. Or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
All right, we're back, folks. Alan?
Yeah.
Before we get started, tell our listeners about what you have to offer, your DVD and the books and et cetera.
Yeah, if they go to cuttingthroughthematrix.com, they can look at the videos. I've also got the first one, which is free on the site, the first DVD on reality checks. They can also purchase it if they want to for other people who don't have computers.
Oh, that's nice. You've got that on DVD now?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Because a lot of people don't have computers. And they can, and it plays on the DVD player for your TV.
Uh-huh, good.
Now
you have Reality Check, too.
Coming out too. Yeah.
Now you have Reality Check, too.
Yeah.
But you have Reality Check 1 on DVD?
Yeah.
Okay, so both of them are available now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. And the first one is there for people to watch free if they want to, but they can purchase it to show their friends and family, etc. And the other one is for purchase only. Reality Check 2.
Yeah.
And your books.
And there's the three books there, the Cutting Through series, which is a form of deprogramming, which it does work. I've had a lot of people who've... it's not what they expect. It's not the usual boring. This happened in the year so-and-so, and it's a method of showing you what's in front of you that you've missed, to show you that you're living in not just deception, but even the deception of the language you're given is so coded, and once they understand it, it becomes obvious to them. And the higher Freemasons use these codes all the time. And I've got another one coming out, it'll be about a month's time, hopefully, that goes further into this whole coding business for those who have already caught up on the last three books.
Okay. A deprogramming.
Yes.
That's what you call the books?
Yeah, because you have to deprogram people. It's not just a matter of... here's the trick that's played on us, apart from the fact we're brainwashed into a version of reality.
We're born into it, Alan.
You're born into it. And if your parents don't know to tell you how it works, you would think it's normal. Now, so, which means anything can be normal to a child brought up in any system. And so you have to show them that it's by history, too.
Right.
That this is a planned society. And it's to be a planned world. It's all coming together. All the laws are coming together, the legalities, so we can merge the whole planet quite smoothly, as they did with the merger of Europe. They merged the country's laws together quietly over a period of 50 years, and eventually they started to standardize the money, bring some down and value some up, so they could simply merge it into the euro. And they're doing the same in North America here, and with Latin America. And so everything that happens is planned. Nothing just happens at the time. And these front meetings we see where they put their signature on something as presidents, that's just a show for the public. In reality, the negotiations and all of the footwork were done by bureaucrats and lawyers for the last 50 years. You know. So I go through this kind of stuff to show the people it's much, much deeper. You can't play the game of politics. It's totally corrupt, always was. Politicians are vetted long before the public even hear their names to vote for. They're vetted by the big boys, and the ones that are chosen go along with the agenda. That's their job. Politics is a front in itself for the agenda, and it stops the people from revolting every 4 or 5 years, and that's why they gave this so-called democratic system, beginning with Britain. They found that the public was generally, they were so overtaxed over hundreds of years, and all the wars that came along after the Rothschilds took over the bank, and they got a standing army paid for by the taxpayer. The people were so overtaxed, they knew they'd have a revolution every 4 or 5 years, so they gave them this thing called democracy and carried on as usual with the same antics. But the people think, well, we've got a chance, we can get these guys out. And that's what you do in these countries. You vote the last lot of politicians out, hoping the next bunch will be better. And it never is.
Well, and today, at least here in the U.S., and I don't know how many countries are using the computer voting machines, but in the U.S. today, voting is actually futile.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because your vote can be changed as it's being cast.
It always was,
with the die vault. Not always, not this easy.
Well, I'll tell you, what I found strange, I only went to a voting office once, and that was because someone told me to meet them there. I'm proud to say I've never voted for anything or anybody in my life. I was never fooled. But I went to this one in Ontario here to meet someone, and every woman that was counting the votes in that office had an Eastern Star badge on. That's no coincidence.
I see.
You know, and Stalin himself...
So they weren't voted, they weren't counted right in front of the public at the voting precinct itself?
Yeah.
They weren't?
Oh, they were counted in there, but all the staff there that were in charge of the boxes and in the counting were all these women with Eastern Star badges on.
And the public wasn't allowed in while the counting was going on, I suppose. Okay.
And
same
Stalin
thing, you're
himself
right.
Said, I don't care who votes for whom, he says.
That's right.
He says, that's irrelevant. He says, I only care about the one that counts.
Yeah, well, he counts the vote.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a con game, it always was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to say before we got off that subject, and then we'll get back off it again,
mm-hmm.
When we were talking about it being our responsibility, at least, to inform people.
Mm-hmm.
Just and I went grocery shopping the other day, and stopped and had lunch, and she accidentally put aspartame or one of those, I think it was might have been Splenda, in her coffee cup, and she took a drink and said, whoa. So she asked the waitress if she could please have another cup, and it was a brand new cup of coffee, and she says, oh, that's great, I use that, I'll drink it myself. And she started walking away.
Yep.
And I said, was it Splenda sis, that you put in your coffee?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I said, no Splenda, no Splenda, as she was walking away. And she turned around and she says, no Splenda? I said, no. So she came back and she asked me about it. I said, no, it's real bad news. Any of the artificial sweeteners, I said, just do a search on your search engine for Splenda. I asked her if she had a computer. I said, just do a search for Splenda, and you will find out about it. She said, thank you. And that was the end of it. And, I mean, she meant it, Alan.
Yeah.
She wasn't just, oh, I'm a customer, so humor me.
Yeah.
She was very, very appreciative to hear that. She had no idea. Mm-hmm. And it took about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's anything like that.
Oh, yeah. You can't really stop yourself.
I know you can't.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah. And there's so many opportunities.
Every time somebody says something, it's an opening, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. And then there comes a time where you just have to gulp, because everything they say is an opening.
Yes.
Everything they say. But when it comes to vaccines, when it comes to things like that, it's killing.
Yeah.
It's killing. It's our responsibility to say it. Whether they listen or not is, of course, going to be their own responsibility.
Yeah.
It's what, and you know, I may have said this already. I may have said it on the air, but this thought has been in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
If I knew, Alan, when I was a young woman of childbearing, if I knew what this world was like, I don't believe I would have ever brought children into the world.
Yeah.
Alan, I mean that.
Well, I decided that before I had a woman. Yeah. I knew it then.
You knew it, but I didn't. And then I think to myself, well, you know what? Who are we to say who's to be here or not? Because there are people who come up, and I read something, and in fact, I wanted to use it tonight as our spiritual message. It was spiritual, I guess, in a sense, but basically what it said was that something about today, there are so few who are doing so much for so many. But it had to do with the people who are awake and are awakening others.
Yeah, because we are at a crucial time. In the past, it wasn't so urgent. It was always there, boiling away, simmering away. But now it's urgent because we know they've published so much on their scientific data. They've had so many world meetings of scientists of what to do with the public, the type of public they wish to have, and in very, very near future. And we know it's a robotic type society.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's why it's so urgent now. Yeah.
Yes.
Because those who are growing up now are the ones who are going to go through the biggest changes that's ever been seen here for probably thousands of years.
Do you think this is the end of an age?
Oh, it is the end of an age. There's no doubt, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the end of the age of Pisces and the age.
Yeah, and
but,
with that...
But do they... No, but I want to ask you a question. Hmm. Do they refer to that as an age?
Yeah, to them it's the period of time, and every age, in every age they have their agenda scheduled out.
So is that every 2,700 years?
It's over 25,500.
Yeah.
Thousand. And now they knew, if you notice, history went along with the usual conquering stuff, the building up of empires, in a traditional fashion. With the bank, the backing of the money lenders and the taxations of the conquered people. It went on quite the same, and so did agriculture and so on, up until about the 1500s. And it was in the 1500s, as though an alarm bell went off, suddenly there was this explosion of Rosicrucianism throughout Europe. And it was always Rosicrucians in amongst and around the royal families, the advisors and so on, and they were into the sciences. Suddenly science was very important to them, because they knew they had only about 500 years left to complete the mission, or that through science they would conquer all or finish off this, the period for the age. And that's why they've had this tremendous rush since the 1500s.
So you're saying, according to them, an age is a full cycle of the zodiacal ages.
It's called the Great Zodiac, yeah.
The Great Zodiac, because according to, you know, what I've read, and I think we've talked about it, during the time when Jesus was here, that's why they used the sign of the fish, because it was the age of Aquarius.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was about 2,000 years ago. So isn't each of those inner ages about 20-some hundred years?
Yeah.
Yeah, in
so
their
that's
country.
That's what it is. It's broken down. Now within the great cycle, one particular sign predominates, just as you do in the annular cycle. And so they have all the mini ones in between them. And so the end of the age... technically, we're going into this is Aquarius, and they've been arguing about the exact moment of reaching Aquarius for the last 60 years.
Oh, moment!
and the Theosophy Society came out with different.
So you're saying that in this age, this great age, there's one particular sign that is predominant.
That's Aquarius, the water bearer.
Oh, in this. I mean the great age, the whole 25,000 years.
They do have a sort of symbol for it, an occultic symbol. Some of them have different occultic symbols to confuse it all, because they claim that every year, and I truly believe this, because if you were to study, supposing the so-called civilization, as they call it.
Yeah.
Let's take the standard nonsense we're fed here. Life begins at Sumer, or civilization begins at Sumer. That's nonsense. Sumer came on the scene fully fledged as a system, with its money form, with its even receipts. You could get a baked clay receipt at the market within 15 minutes. They found millions of them. And they had all these priesthoods that acted as bureaucrats and governmental departments, you might say, governing all trade.
But how did a humongous was Sumer a city?
It was both city and cities. Some of them include Mari to the northwest as part of the whole Sumer area. It was really Akkadia. They also called it the whole area. Akkadia.
Would you spell that?
Some of them use K A K A D I A.
Akkadia. Yeah. Okay.
Other ones use the sea, but it's up to the person.
But how in the world, out of almost nowhere, how did they gather so many people?
Uh-huh.
How did this, I mean...
Well, we know they came down from the highland areas to the northeast of them, and they brought the seed with them, which meant there was a previous agricultural civilization existing to have the seed. See, nomadic peoples don't keep seed and plants. They're always on the move.
They're so wandering. These
people came from the mountainous areas and brought this system with them. So they had to have gotten it from not only from a previous age. Now, to knock out the nonsense that we just sort of evolved from there, piecemeal, by good luck or whatever. Here's the clue. They knew astronomy inside out even at the beginning of Sumer.
Yes.
Now, if you were to follow
even more
all
so
the stars,
than they did 1,500 years ago.
Even if you followed all the stars and all the planets and the rising and settings and the different comets that come and go, etc., to get one great year, you'd have to have studied it for 25,500 years already to be sure it would happen exactly the same way again. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you just watched it one time around, you couldn't be certain it was going to come in the same sequence again. So this man is far, far older with knowledge, intellect, methods of obviously translating this or putting this information down and teaching it to others to have had that extreme knowledge at the beginning of Sumer.
Yeah.
So that's the key to that.
Well,
we're not supposed to know. So getting back to what we're saying here, they plan the ages. Now, the many ages are, with each 2,000, it's over 2,000 years. Again, another sign will predominate. So you'll have within the great zodiac, you had Pisces for the time of Jesus. The fish was a symbol long before the cross. And even after the cross, that was used for 200 years before the cross was officially made the Christian symbol.
And they
had the 2,000 years mapped out. In other words, their goal was mapped out at the beginning.
What do you know about the giants that were here?
I don't go along with all of that.
Well, I've been reading some stuff.
Yeah.
This one of the things came from Ohio, and they actually showed the reports. You know how the little town halls or the county seats that we have now, but where the records were kept. This was back maybe 1800 sometime.
Yeah.
They dug up. They found all kinds of bones.
Mm-hmm.
And this was reported, and it was recorded in the public records. And these people were 8, 9, 10 feet tall, very large. And they had double rows of teeth. They showed jaws in them, Alan. And then evidently there are some of the American Indians that were here before us. I don't know, why do we call them Indians? Because... Because he thought they said he thought he landed on India.
I know.
But I'd like to find a word to say for those people. But anyway, that in their lore, a lot of them said that there were giants here before they were here.
Uh-huh.
And the one story, and a lot of it, you know, of course, it's oral history. So we know that where there's smoke, there's fire. And I suppose it changes down through the years, but that there were red-bearded ones and black-bearded ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then it reminded me of when we've talked about those red-haired people, you know, like in Egypt, the pharaohs, and over there in China.
And even the heads of kings and queens for Sumer. We knew they wore black wigs.
Oh, in Sumer they were red-headed too. Well, that reminded me of that, but I'm not so sure, Alan, that there weren't a very large race of people here at one time.
Mm-hmm. It's possible you'll have aberrations even within groups. We still have different aberrations in some African tribes where they all have six toes, for instance. The whole tribe, every member, and fingers as well. So you'll get these things happening within people who interbreed intensively. If there's already a dominant gene there, it'll get passed on, and they'll start losing it if they start breeding out.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to look into this further. I found it very fascinating. And there's so much we don't know, Alan.
I mean, I know, but in the 1800s there was so many, there was so much going on. There was an awful lot of con games going on in the 1800s too in the U.S. And that's when T.T. Barnum took over, because someone came out and claimed they'd found a giant and that they put it on display or something, then that it was stolen. and so he or some of his friends came up with one. They made it themselves and claimed it was a real thing.
Uh-huh.
And they toured the whole of the U.S. with it for a few years and then admitted it was a fake. So there was so much nonsense going on at the time, it's hard to tell, because we weren't there, really, you know.
I know, well, we weren't there during any of this.
Yeah.
That's really the whole point.
We just don't know.
I just wondered, you know, if you...
I don't know if they've even... See, if they still had... And even then, I mean, after the Piltdown Man that was taught as fact, and people had thesis for the universities, and they passed it on, this whole Piltdown Man...
What was the Piltdown Man?
Well, they had it on display to try and prove it was a missing link for evolution, to try and prove. And then it came out after years and years on display and taught in every school across the world as a fact. But when they eventually did test it, The jaw was that of a pig stuck onto a gorilla's skull. So they do all these cons in history in a big way, and it's always the bigger the con, the more gullible the people are.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sad truth, you know. It's a sad, sad truth.
Were the American Indians weren't real small people, were they?
Oh, some of them were pretty tall, especially up here in Canada.
Well, so see, we're looking at a different race, of course, again.
Mm-hmm.
What brought that to my mind as we were talking today about Valley Forge,
mm-hmm.
and I said it was so fascinating to go there and look at in those little cabins,
uh-huh.
the bunks that they slept in.
Mm-hmm.
It was something I'd have been comfortable in, Alan.
Well, if you look at a lot of the old buildings across Europe that the people lived in, not only that, going to the castles, that's what hit me when I was really young. I went off to explore the castles. And the regular guards, the armies, had breastplates that wouldn't have fit me at 13 or 12.
Okay, there you go.
And the normal people you see were starved. They weren't getting proper diets. That was the reason for it. See, you can make people stunted in growth by malnourishment. And that's why the nobility grew to their full height.
Well, I'm talking, though, about these people that were here in the U.S., in America,
mm-hmm.
back in the 1700s, and they were meat eaters, Alan.
Yeah.
They were small. They were short. I remember at the island in Michigan, Mackinac Island,
mm-hmm.
there's a fort there. And we went there to see the fort. And they said that was one of the reasons that they wore those really tall hats was to make them look more frightening.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were shorter. The average male was about 5'3", 5'4", maybe. Well, so men today are larger, but the point I was thinking about is at that same time, and they seem to be the European white that was smaller, shorter. The American Indians were here, and they were of an average or taller height.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, so it seems that from those 200 years, that the males are taller today.
Everyone's. If you come from Europe, I was astonished to look at the size of people, male and female, the young people.
Small or big?
Big.
Oh.
Around the 6 foot mark and so
And
then I caught on to what was the cause. There's a cause for it. Because the U.S. allowed the growth hormone in food long before they did in Europe. And that hormone is not destroyed by cooking. It's in all the meat products. And it makes you grow just as it's meant to make the cattle grow. Yeah. That's the cause of it. In World War I...
I'm not so sure about that.
Check it up.
Okay.
You don't destroy hormones by boiling
that growth hormone... from what I read about, they gave it to the cattle a few weeks before market to fatten them up.
And that's what they claim.
Yeah. Okay. Then I'll have to look that up, too. Anyway,
yeah,
those...
here's the thing with Britain, for instance. They found in World War I, the average soldier who came in, and they were all malnourished at the worst terrible diet. They averaged around the age of 18... they were about 5'2" tall.
Wow.
And within 4 months of having army food, the best meals
they began to grow.
The average person shrugged 6 inches.
Wow.
In 4 months.
We're out of our hour.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Folks, tune in to Darren Monday night for sure and find out more about the vaccine we were talking about earlier. Alan, thanks.
Okay.
And thanks for being here, folks. Good night. God bless you all.
So I say this to the militias and all others who believe that the greatest threat to freedom comes from the government. If you appropriate our sacred symbols for paranoid purposes and compare yourselves to colonial militias who fought for the democracy you now rail against, you are wrong. How dare you call yourselves patriots and heroes?